Welcome to And For Off the Block, your weekly podcast for college men's volleyball. And now here's your host, Off the Block editor, Vinny Lips.
And welcome in, everyone. Do you feel it in the air? Brandon, do you feel it in the air?
I can feel it coming in the air tonight, as a wise man once said.
I can feel it. Jonathan, do you feel it in the air?
Well, seeing as I'm bald, yeah, makes it easier.
We're all feeling it. It is Conference Championship Saturday. Round of applause for everyone. We made it to Conference Championship Saturday.
We're alive.
One of my favorite days of the year. We are going to have 5 automatic bids up for grabs in a span of not even 24 hours, like 12 hours. This is going to be absolutely bananas on Sunday. We are here to break it all down, all the matches, what you can expect only as we do it. So let's do a little bit of a dealer's choice here. We have actually 6 conferences. We can flip in the NEC as well, even though they don't have an at-large or they don't have an auto bid going on right now.
Also, you can also throw in this SIAC as well.
Yes, and I predict that Edward Waters sweeps that. Going to make that prediction right now. Match happened Friday. Congrats to the Tigers on that win. We can touch on that match a little bit later on. But, Brandon, let's start with you. Dealer's choice. Where do you want to start off?
Well, my wife and I are making the drive up to Stanford tomorrow, so I wouldn't mind starting with MPSF, but I'm open for whatever.
All right, let's start off with the MPSF. So here, I think, is the ultimate question. Stanford, got a chance? Question mark?
You know, I just have a hard time believing it, only because, like, Stanford obviously, just like almost every other team, does better at home, and you know, we saw that play out in the semifinals. They lost both matches at BYU, and then they returned the favor last night, and But at the same time, UCLA, we saw them absolutely dominate Stanford when they went up there earlier this year at Stanford. And there's nothing that I see from the UCLA side that shows me that they have slowed down. I want to just, you know, try to find a hole just for the sake of having something more competitive or even be a little bit more contradictory, but I just don't see anything.
I guess for me, on my end, the only thing that Stanford could find going their way is that, you know, when it comes to tournament time and when it comes to that win or go home, especially for Stanford, that this is their one shot to get in. They basically know that they're not going to be an at-large. And I'm sure we'll talk about that in a little while. I don't think that they have a chance for an at-large. But they know that it's the win or go home, whereas UCLA knows that they're basically going to be a lock for an at-large anyway. To me, that could be the only thing that could possibly sway it Stanford's way. I mean, yes, you could say it's at home, but UCLA just took care of them twice at home. You could say, well, they're playing in the main gym instead of the smaller gym. Yeah, well, UCLA played a match there last night, and so now they have a little bit more of a comfort level. So I think things are stacking up really well for UCLA. They've been playing great all season. Hard to see it not going their way in the final.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we talk about, first, Stanford, hats off making this run. You know, we talk about them losing to UCLA. It was an onslaught. I remember turning on that match and 5 points in, I was like, okay, I can flip on to something else because UCLA is just rolling in this one beyond belief. And I believe UCLA almost hit close to 500 in that series, like just insane, which funny enough, UCLA is literally now becoming non-commonplace when they put up 450 in a match, like attack. It is just insane the offensive firepower that they have. That being said, with Stanford, you know, if you want to play a little devil's advocate here, you know, I'm looking at this team. They have history of beating UCLA in the postseason. You know, you're at your place. You have an absolute stud libero. I think maybe the one area where Stanford has an advantage over UCLA is at the libero. And UCLA probably has one of the top 5 liberos in the nation It's just, you know, Justin Louis is that much, is so good at the position. So you're right. You know, maybe, maybe Rotman can catch fire like he was able to do last year when, you know, Stanford beat UCLA. But I agree, it is going to be a very tall order for the Cardinals.
And I realize it's just one match, but the other thing that makes me kind of uneasy about Stanford's chances is that they pulled Litsky the third set, and obviously Bria did a great job and basically was the number one reason why they turned that match around. But that question mark at setting is kind of worrisome if I'm a Stanford fan.
No, and I think that's going to be the interesting – you're exactly right. I think that's going to be an interesting question. It's kind of funny you think about, you know, how this match plays out for all the talk of UCLA setter, you know, midway through the season and you know, Rowan stepping in and everything. It's the other side of the net where you have that question mark. So I think this one's going to be, like I said, I think this one's going to be interesting. You never know. It's a one-game sample size. Maybe, you know, UCLA struggles from the service line. You know, you have to hope if you're Stanford, you get them off their game with a service error. I think, though, and Brandon, correct me if I'm wrong in this, I think in a match like this, if Stanford has a chance, they have to take the opening set.
I think it would be very hard for them to come from behind in this one when you're going against a team that is, on paper, substantially more talented, has already shown that they can beat them twice this season. I think, yeah, getting that momentum in the first set, you know, whether UCLA plays well or not, if Stanford can win that first set, and then you're right, I think the serving could be a huge question, even though I don't think this UCLA team is nearly the same kind of service error struggling kind of a team that they've been in the past. And so, yeah, that would be the blueprint for sure.
All right. Well, let's now segue here really quick. Speaking about question marks, I know that, you know, we don't know what's going to be happening with the Stanford Sayre situation. Big question mark in another conference final match is Penn State. Toby Azeez went down with a little bit
Toby Ezeonu.
Ezeonu. Sorry. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe I did that. No. I knew that name didn't sound right. I was saying the legendary pin hitter from
Mount Olive.
Oh, man. Okay. So, anywho.
Hey, they're both All-Americans. It's fair.
Yeah. So, let's...
And honestly, both of those are like A-plus names.
Yeah, those are great. Yeah. Those are great volleyball names. All right. So,
100%.
Let's stay here. Toby went down with an injury in the semifinals against George Mason. Look, we're not going to speculate if he's going to be able to play or not, but it adds an extra wrinkle into this Penn State match against Princeton. Princeton, a team that Penn State handled very well in the regular season. But keep in mind two things about this match. One, this Princeton team in many ways is built for the postseason one-match scenarios where we can blitz you off the line if everyone gets hot. And that is just their serving MO. They are aggressive serving. And number two, they did it last year against Penn State. They were able to beat Penn State in the EIVA tournament semifinals that time, went on to win. So I ask you, Jonathan, does it happen again? Does Princeton win back-to-back? Are they able to pull off another upset against the Nittany Lions?
I want to say no. I think the other concern that I have is I'm not convinced that even though he played the full match that Brett Wildman is 100% either. So that he's been dealing with a injury all season long, varying degrees of able to manage it. So between those two, definitely Princeton has a shot. They know what both teams are super familiar with each other, so they know what the blueprint is. But I feel like after getting left out of the tournament last year and that bad taste, like they're not going to take anything for granted, and they're not going to under Penn State's not going to take anything for granted, and Penn State's not going to underestimate Princeton. If Princeton wins, it's just because they out executed them. It won't be because of a lack of preparation or a lack of or something mentally. I don't think this is a sweep. I think this is definitely going to be a more competitive match than UCLA and Stanford. But even with the injury with Uzionu, I think that Penn State has enough to take the match. And you guys know that I'm going to beat a dead horse here too. But I think Penn State also suffers from the same thing that UCLA suffers from in terms of service errors. If they get on to a really bad a match in terms of from the service line in terms of serving the match away, that could be a path for Princeton to win the match.
Another thing that both those teams struggle with is real estate. And because you think about the two teams, you got to find real estate in those arenas for all their championship trophies. UCLA, 19 NCAA championship trophies they got to find a place for. Penn State, 32 EIVA championships, trying to go for number 33. You know, I look at this match, and I love the matchup. You know, I think that what people need to realize is that this is a Princeton team that's continuing to build that culture of this is kind of now the expectation that they are going to be in the EIVA finals. And even Donovan, it's kind of been weird because, you know, they didn't play two EIVA finals because of COVID, but in the last four seasons that Princeton has actually played, they've made the EIVA finals in all of those. And I think that's a testament to Swiecki. Obviously, you have absolute studs, you know, whether Tarrington, Wedbush, you know, all those players are absolutely good. They're not going to be intimidated going up against Penn State. But, you know, I was sitting in the and speaking about their serving, you know, we saw what they were able to do against NJIT. Now, a little bit of different passers because I think Wildman's one of the best passers in college men's volleyball. So that'll be kind of a fun matchup within the matchup. But, you know, I was seeing that news conference post-match for Penn State after they beat George Mason. And look, Tav, the players, they're saying all the right things. They're, you know, they're paying, you know, they obviously have lots of respect for Princeton. But I just almost got the sense, and this is just me kind of trying to read between the lines, you know, maybe I'm off here. I just got a sense that this is a match that Penn State wants. It's almost as if we need to exercise this demon from last year and go up against them and knock them off after what happened last year. So I think that there is going to be some extra motivation. I think that Rec Hall is going to be rocking. I think, you know, the Wrecking Crew is going to be out there in full force. I'm excited for this match. And also hats off to the EIVA as well, making sure that this match isn't behind a paywall, even though it's going to be on Big Ten Plus. So everyone's going to be able to view it, even if you don't have a Big Ten Plus account, unlike the first match that we previewed.
Hey, Vinny, this is kind of interesting. When you were going through it at the beginning, this match feels eerily similar in a lot of ways to the UCLA Stanford one, where, you know, the quote unquote underdog team upset the favorite last season. There's a chance for redemption this year. The team is a heavy favorite. Who knows what's going to happen? You know, it kind of has a similar kind of feel when you really kind of break it down in that aspect.
Yeah. No, you're right. And the other thing to keep in mind also, other than the Loyola-McKendree match, this entire postseason has kind of gone the way we thought it would. You had some 3-2 upsets and everything, but for the most part, lots of chalk. And I think even NJIT Charleston, I think that was – Charleston was the three, but as a push. All right.
One more thing. The other similarity that UCLA and Penn State have is they have really great middle attackers. They have Merrick McHenry. It leads the country with a 527 attack percentage. Uzionu is number two at 497. Brandon, these MI oversimplifying this and saying that they are the two best middles in the country right now?
I think without a question. And, you know, and that's why I think that Toby is so important to Penn State. And, you know, if you have someone with a 500 hitting percentage, I mean, that is so huge, such a huge number. And so if you take that out of the lineup, yeah, Penn State does have depth that a lot of other teams don't have. But, I mean, you're not simply just replacing those numbers. And as Vinny mentioned, you know, in that one game small sample size, you know, a kill here or there, an error here or there could play a huge role if he's not able to go in the match.
All right. Vinny, I got a segue for you.
Okay, go ahead. You do the segue on this one. Go, Jonathan.
I don't know the answer to this, but you probably do off the top of your head. Who has more conference championships, Penn State or the two MIVA finalists combined?
The two – well, okay. This is where stuff gets a little dicey. Are we talking conference championships?
Yes,
okay. Oh, yeah. Well, then it's Penn State. Then it's Ball State, Ohio State. They're in the 40-plus. The reason why it gets tricky is because for – about 10 years, there wasn't a conference tournament in the MIVA in the 70s. And interesting enough, Ball State and Ohio State would usually just play the final weekend of the regular season. And that would usually be what would determine who would win. And here we are again. For the first time since 2009, when I was actually a student at Ball State, covering the match in Columbus, Ohio. For the first time since 2009, Ball State, Ohio State in the MIVA Finals. It is a rivalry that goes all the way back to 1961. First time they met in the MIVA Finals, 1965, when a young Mick Haley, playing as almost a de facto player coach in that situation because the legendary Don Shondell was on sabbatical getting his PhD that year. Marvin Garvey was the head coach for that 1 year, did not know a whole lot about volleyball, so he let Mick Haley kind of run the X's and O's. A little tidbit as we now get into the breakdown. This is your – and, you know, we talked about the first two matches. I think, fellas, this is the interesting kind of – again, in this one, you know, the talk was, okay, you know, if Penn State loses, maybe they still have a chance. If UCLA loses, they still have a chance. This is a true winner-go-home. Neither Ball State or Ohio State are getting at-large bids if they don't win this. So it all comes down to this. They split the regular season series. Ball State hit 400-plus in the win. They were up 2-0 at Columbus. Ohio State came back and won. And, guys, when I'm looking at this match, I think the key for me is going to be the matchup within the matchup is can Ball State shut down the middles of Ohio State. And I think because when we've seen when Ball State's been successful this season, it's one that they've been able to eliminate the middles, not really get teams to run, and then you force Ohio State to become a little bit more one-dimensional where they're relying on Wetzel and they're relying on Pastor, probably the best player on the court in this match. When Ball State struggled, I think we saw it against Long Beach State. We saw it against, you know, Grand Canyon. It's when teams were really good running the middles against them. So I think that's the matchup within the matchup. I'm excited about this one. I think if history's any indication, I think Ball State has the edge just because the match is at Worthen Arena. But this one, these two teams always play each other tight. I mean, no matter if one team's better, superiorly better than the other. I mean, how many years was it during the Nick Cesarian era where, you know, Ohio State was just so much better, yet Ball State would push them to five? And same way when, you know, when Ball State's been a little ahead, Ohio State's been able to push them. So I think that this is once again going to be another classic showdown in this rivalry that dates back 60 years.
I'll defer to Brandon on this because he can speak from a coach's standpoint, but there has to be some, I don't know how you quantify it, but there has to be something said about knowing how to win. We know, we'll get into this a little bit later. We know Hawaii knows how to win the title. We know that North Greenville knows how to win the conference. Obviously Ball State won the conference last year, and so they know what it takes. And I think there has to be something to be said about that. That being obviously it's a different team, but you know, you still have some of the same elements pieces from last year. You're starting an outside attacker, and you're a head coach, the whole coaching staff. So yeah, I don't think that can be dismissed. Both teams are coming in with a pretty significant winning streak. Ball State has won their last 8. Ohio State's won their last 11. So they're both clicking at the right time. I agree that I think that maybe if I had to pick who's going to win, the home court advantage is probably the thing that would where I would lean. But at the same time, I don't know. I just like the way that Ohio State's been a little bit more consistent. I think we see with Mr. T that he's at times he's really good, but at times he's inconsistent. And whereas I think we know what we're getting with Ohio State. Past year is just what he was the player of the conference, right? Or the player of the year in the conference. So I'm looking forward to this one. This one, like you said, it's for all the marbles and win or go home. I think that it'll be a good one.
I think coming into the season, Pasteur had a lot of Mr. T in him, though. Like, I think that those are kind of really similar players, and Pasteur having, another year under his belt, having some training and stuff with the Team USA over the summer and all kind of stuff has really kind of honed his game in a lot of ways. But if that Pasteur comes out and he is pretty wild, either from the service line or offensively, and is creating some errors, though, that is the way that Ball State could come out with it, no problem. John, going back to what you were talking about a little while earlier, there is something definitely there to experience, right? I mean, every team wants to have experience, right? But the only way you get experience is by getting there. And so you have to earn that experience, and sometimes you win it the first time that you're there. So sometimes these teams without the experience can even win. You definitely want to have that. You definitely want to have known how to know the ropes, know how to finish a set off, know how to finish a match off. And a lot of times that's just continuing to play aggressive, fighting to win it instead of playing not to lose, all that kind of stuff, right? It's just a mindset more than anything else. All these dudes have played enough matches in their life. They know how to score a point in volleyball, right? And so it's just continuing with the process and continuing fighting through every single point and not hoping their team gives it to you, but going and getting it on your own. And so I think when we look at this matchup, though, I think that this is the one that we could almost pencil in for 4 to 5 sets much easier than either one of the other two. I feel like this is one that could easily go the distance. That's what makes me look forward to this one.
Yeah, and I completely, like I said, second all those thoughts. And I think going off that experience, I think last year was so big for Ball State. It's one I think that the current players were tired of everyone saying, oh, Ball State, that was the program that was good. And, reference how great, their teams were in the 70s and everything. But it's like, no, we're the team that is good. That's what they want to change that mindset to. And for so many years, Ohio State was that team that would get in the way of Ball State. And, it was, a huge, I mean, when I covered the team, now, granted, all these players are now, in their 30s, but like Ohio State had that absolute mental edge over Ball State. I think that was just clear even from, when I was 21 covering it. But, now, you look at it, I think that Ball State players come in thinking that they can, knowing that they can win, not thinking, knowing that they can win, and Ohio State players come in knowing that they can win. And that's what makes it exciting. I think for me watching these, I'll be honest, of all the teams this season, they probably have seen the most Ball State. I think also, it comes down to consistency. There's always one or two plays every single set when Ball State's struggling where it's like, what in the world was that? And, it's just kind of a point goes away there, point goes away there. And, that's when Ball State can get into trouble. But this is going to be a fun one. Once again, it's going to be exciting. I think the other big thing as well to keep an eye on as we talk about this matchup is the simple fact that you look at the setters and just the great stories that we have from both of these setters. You kind of think the parallel track that these setters went on this season with Flores and Wright, where both of them were starting the season. Then they kind of went to the bench for, you know, various times in February. And then they were able to reinsert themselves in the starting lineup. And they have really been clicking down the second half. And I just think that speaks to one, you know, the testament of the players, you know, the will to keep battling, keep improving, even when you're not in the lineup. And then also the coaching staff, you know, continuing to improve and get better. And I think both these programs have been better from when I saw them, you know, playing on a, you know, kind of a half court in Worthing Arena during preseason. You know, I sat there watching that matchup, and hey, now we're back on the full, non half court, full court, going at it, selling things right now. So this one's going to be fun. I'm excited about this. Could keep talking about this one, but I will digress. Let's switch on over to a couple other matchups to preview. Let's go with the Conference Carolinas. Similar to the MIVA, no at-large bid coming out of the Conference Carolinas. It is going
what?
No, it's not happening. Yeah, I know. No, but hey, look, this has been a wacky conference this year. I think the team that has maybe established themselves the most as kind of a favorite was North Greenville, especially towards the end. They're starting to play well. They're in the finals. You got King that's in the final. It's on King's home court. I'm looking at this one. Jonathan, I like what Warren Davis is doing. He, you know, 26 kills in the 5-game win against Mount Olive. In the quarterfinals, 15 kills against Belmont Abbey in the semifinals. But this North Greenville team, they hype up the fact that they're being disrespected in the conference, that they don't get enough all-conference love. But here they are again, one more win away from returning to the finals.
I don't have the strength of schedule in front of me, but I'm just looking at the schedules. And clearly, North Greenville has the better record, but their best win, and it's not a bad win, obviously, now because St. Francis is playing in the NEC finals, but that's the best win. Whereas you look at King's record, they're 15-15, but they've played the likes of Long Beach State, USC, Lincoln Memorial, Charleston. So that 15-15 record is very misleading. And like you said, this match is on King's home court, and North Greenville is actually 5-6 on the road this year, whereas King is 10-3 at home. So yeah, that has to count for something. But like I said, with Ball State, yeah, there is something to be said about having players and this now head coach having been part of what took them to the NCAA tournament last year. And of course they won an NCAA tournament match last year, so they know what it takes. I don't see them overlooking King by any means. You retweeted it out that they're just their mindset. They're ready. They're ready to go. I don't think. Yeah, I think it'll be competitive, but I think North Greenville will prevail.
This one more than anyone else, though, is the one where you want that team with that experience, right? And North Greenville has it from last year. So
yeah.
Talking about all these other matches, I think this one, even more than any other one, is advantage for experience there.
Well, and we talk about the experience, but let's also keep in mind, I think it's a credit to North Greenville, because while they do have some players, you know, Michael De La Cruz, you know, De Roche, who have returned, you know, from that team that made the NCAA tournament, they also had to replace some key parts. You think about, you know, Gregory Torres not being available this season, having a new starting setter in the lineup, and you got a first-year head coach. And now, granted, you know, McManaway, you know, was, I mean, a long-time invested assistant in that program. But, you know, I think that's a lot of credit to what the coaching staff, the players have done. And, you know, this is going to be a fun one. I'll be honest, the Conference Carolinas has been a little loony all season. in terms of you think you know the answer, and then some team pulls out a win here, some team pulls an upset. It's been a very balanced conference. So I think this is going to be a good one, but like we said here, you got to win this one. If you're either of these two teams, you're not going to advance. Hey, let's segue over really quick to a match. No AQ matters here. NEC's going to have to wait maybe a year, maybe longer. Who knows? That's a different story for a different day. I get approval from the NCAA from stuff, but we have let me ask you a little trivia question here. Schedule-wise, St. Francis and Long Island both have a similarity with their schedule. Both teams are in the NEC finals. They both have a similarity with these schedules. Can either of you guess what it is?
That Hawaii doesn't want to travel to them?
Come on, buddy. Family show. Family show.
And I was going to say the answer was, they both played Hawaii.
In Hawaii.
Well, and here's – really? Okay, come on. Jonathan. Come on, buddy. It's conference championship Saturday. We're here. We're having fun. We're talking about it. And now we're going to get on, you know, Hawaii because they don't want to travel to Loretto, Pennsylvania. Would you be willing to travel to Loretto, Pennsylvania? Lovely town, by the way. Rummy, I love you. I'm not dogging anyone here, but come on. I mean, let's get it. But, hey, once again, just go say this. Turned out two teams that, you know, Hawaii played, take care of business, turned out to be pretty good for the first-year conference. In the conference finals, Jonathan, I'm excited about this one. I'm going to tell you, for me personally, I kind of feel good for Rummy, Michael Rumbaugh for Ohio or for St. Francis, longtime coach there, always was going up against Penn State in big postseason matches, couldn't get over the hump in the EIVA. One year they did get over the hump, upset Penn State then in the semifinals and lost in the finals. Opportunity for them, though, if they win this, to raise the banner against a good Long Island team that, once again, they've done a great job, you know, whether it's, you know, Spencer Cale, the freshman, you know, we talk about, you know, Luke Chandler. On the outside as well, you know, that's a good Long Island team that beat Damon. What is your thoughts about this match? Anything that you're looking for?
So my number one, or my only beef with Western Pennsylvania is I don't understand their obsession with putting French fries on everything, including salad. Like, not only are you putting something unhealthy on something that should be healthy, but, of course, you can make salad unhealthy. But the other thing is that French fries are best consumed warm, and then if you put it on something like lettuce, it wilts it. So I don't understand that. But maybe we can – if Rami makes it to the down to the tournament on his own, we can ask him why that's a thing in Western Pennsylvania. But anyways, on to your question. Definitely for St. Francis and Sacred Heart, and I would even go with Damon, even though Damon was never in the EIVA. These teams that have made the semifinals, they are big time beneficiaries from the NEC becoming our sponsor in men's volleyball, and hopefully they'll get to the point, like you said, that they will get an AQ. I realize that even if I guess one thing I'm kind of bummed about is that if St. Francis had the AQ and they had the chance to play Penn State, that in the tournament, that would be fun. It seems like every time that those two teams meet, especially in Loretto, they go four, they go five. It's never never not a competitive match. But between these two teams, I think Long Island has really shown all year that they've been very consistent. I don't really see anything that glares to me that they have a glaring weakness. A very balanced team. Whereas I think St. Francis, you can honestly say that they're peaking at the right time. They've been doing the second half of the season. Mind you, again, they've played a really tough schedule. They played Hawaii. They played Stanford. So take the schedule for what it's worth, the resume for what it's worth. But and, of course, the match is at home at Loretto. So that's definitely something that is a big advantage. It's not in a big city like Brooklyn, but so, yeah, that could even be more of a consideration, I think.
Question for Brandon. Do you like me calling the St. Francis Arena the big confessional?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yes.
That's pretty
good. All right, and I need to take – or the confessional box, I should say. All right, I need to issue an apology here to the folks of Loretto, if you're in the Chamber of Commerce, obviously joking around. I think that you have a lovely town. That being said, St. Francis has the scariest mascot. I am terrified of that mascot.
Wait. Hold on. Willie the Wave is
only
not...
Only second to Willie the Wave.
Okay, I was going to say.
Only
come on.
Second to Willie the Wave. Those two mascots, the mascot fight, terrifying mascot. Just saying. Just throwing it out there. That being said, you win the trophy. Give it to the mascot. Let him lift it. Get a picture. Send it to me. It should be a good one. All right. We got one more matchup to talk about. And I want to segue here a little bit, kind of go a little different way as we discuss this. But let's talk just a little bit about Hawaii here and the breakdown. You know, we saw that they were able to do against UC Santa Barbara. Brandon, impressed with this team all season long. I think that they're playing really well. Do we feel that they are playing at the high – or, well, I guess let me rephrase this in terms of before I say that, because I think they've been playing very high caliber volleyball. Do we think that they can continue to keep this going? And do we even think that they can improve even more in the next 2 weeks before the NCAA tournament?
I could spend about an hour talking about this Hawaii team. I mean, they're so good. They're so consistent. Every facet of the game they're very good at. I don't think there's any question that they are one of the two or three best teams in the country. I want us just to be able to witness I want to see UCLA, Penn State, and Hawaii all play each other again. If I'm going to be just truly honest, I want to see those matchups again. I think those are the best teams in the country. But yeah, I mean, I think you just know what you're going to get from Hawaii. They are probably the most consistent team in the country in all facets of the sport. And so they're great. They're a great volleyball team. They're so much fun to watch. And I think that no matter who they play, as the other match is currently going on as we're recording right now, whoever they play, Hawaii is going to have the advantage. And I see Hawaii coming out of that conference as a champion.
Jonathan, I'm going to give you a second here as Brandon and I banter a little bit. But as Brandon and I banter, do you mind just coming up with a quick list in your head, the five things you like most about Hawaii? They're all positive.
Well, okay, so I don't know if I could come up with five right off the top of my head, but the one thing I want to point out.
I was going to say, Brandon and I can banter so you can think about it.
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah, you were mentioning about UCLA, like if they don't hit 400, like that's like kind of a mild surprise, right? But I realize that UCLA is the number one hitting team, and but Hawaii's right behind them, like – they're at 375, UCLA is 381. Like, for some reason, even though UCLA has a minor advantage there, it just seems like when Hawaii doesn't hit 400, that's even more of a surprise than UCLA. I can't really explain that. Maybe I'm just, like, that impressed with their offense, like, Tella, like, his back set tonight. You guys saw that? Wow, that was ridiculous. And then, you know, when you get to P, players like Mukulius and Hawkins, like, makes life easier, right? So, how do you stop them? Like, there is a blueprint, but just because you have a blueprint, it doesn't mean that you can execute it. I mean, clearly.
It feels like you almost have to just play that perfect match against them, right? I mean,
and hope that they have somebody has.
Yeah, I mean, if any of those top teams play a perfect match against Hawaii, though. I mean, and quote unquote perfect is, you know,
right,
an interesting term. But if they play a quote unquote perfect match against Hawaii, any of those teams can and could easily beat Hawaii at that point, right? I mean, it's just Hawaii is so consistent across the board, right? It just it takes that Herculean effort just to knock them off.
All right. All right. Everyone ready? I have my five favorite things I like about Hawaii. Are we ready?
Wait, are we talking about the state or the program?
The program. Are we ready?
Because it's like
number five, mm-hmm. free tacos for sweeps. Number four, a challenge paddle. So much better than every other team.
Whoa. That's at four.
Wow.
Number
I can't wait
three.
To top three.
Okay.
I
number
still think
three.
It should be. I think it should be a challenge full surfboard. By the way, but
I agree with that. I can go with that. All right. Number three. The player introduction.
Solid.
I mean, those are good introductions. Number two. The Nordic clap at match point. And number one, senior night.
So
those are my five favorite things about Hawaii.
I do love looking at the senior night pictures and having no clue who each player is though.
Exactly.
I love that. It is one of the coolest things. And from what I can understand and see, they do it in like all the sports. That's not men's volleyball specific, and that's pretty awesome.
So, Brandon, what's your top five? I have to come up with a couple more, but so yeah, you can say yours while I think of a couple more. I have a top three.
All right. Well, why don't you give us your top three?
Just to throw you under the bus, I'm going to go with Kanoa Leahy at three.
Respect, yeah.
Tiff at two, and the GOAT at number one.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that.
Yep.
To those that don't know,
the GOAT is what Vinny refers to Cindy Lewis as.
Yeah, gold standard. Greatest American volleyball reporter, period.
Period.
End of discussion.
And
end of discussion. All right. Let's talk a little bracketology really quick. Okay, so here's where we are, bracketology. I'm just going to give a quick overview, then you all can hit me with questions if you have any. So this all has been it's not like last year, knock on wood. There hasn't been a whole lot of craziness going on. Everything seems to be pretty settled. The only way things are not going to get settled is if Penn State loses, UCLA loses, and if Long Beach or Hawaii loses. So if all three of those teams lose, we're going to have complete chaos. If that doesn't happen, pretty straightforward on the teams that are going to get in. I think that UCLA Penn State will get in. If they lose, they should be okay. But we'll let that stuff play out as it is. Assuming if one of those teams lose, obviously, once again, if you had Hawaii, Penn State, UCLA lose, you're going to have craziness to figure that stuff out. That's going to be a mess. That's not what the committee – that's going to make the committee's job immensely more difficult if that scenario happens. That would be a lot of upsets, though, for that to happen, especially in the MPSF and EIVA. So assuming that everything goes chalk, we're going to make that assumption.
So repeat what chalk is.
Oh, for chalk, the number one seeds all win.
Okay.
Number one seeds all win, or if Long Beach beats Hawaii. Because Long Beach, if Hawaii and Long Beach play each other, the winner of that match gets the AQ, the loser is going to get the first at large, if everything goes chalk, which, once again, never know. But if Penn State wins, UCLA wins, you're then looking at the final at-large bid. That is going to go to Grand Canyon. And look, I totally know what the argument's going to be. They finished fourth place in their conference. Not a criteria factor. They went 4-6 in their final 10 matches. Record in the last 10, not a criteria factor that the committee considers. The factors that they do consider, Grand Canyon has an advantage in everything. look at the matchups with BYU that they have. Own the head-to-head against BYU. Better RPI, better SOS, better record against teams under consideration. You then think about, well, okay, maybe would Ball State, for instance, if they lose, have a chance? Nope, Grand Canyon holds the head-to-head. Better RPI, better record against teams under NCAA tournament consideration. Well, Ohio State, if they were to lose, could they have a shot? Their RPI is a little better. Their RPI is 6. Nope. Grand Canyon still there. RPI is better at 5. Ohio State is a little bit better than SOS, but the head-to-head is Grand Canyon, and Grand Canyon has a better record against teams under NCAA tournament consideration. Mathematically, if everything goes chalk, I just don't see a way that Grand Canyon does not get it. There would have to be something super nuanced that I'm not seeing in the numbers and the data that would prevent Grand Canyon getting in. And, you know, you think about, and it's kind of funny, Phyllis, I think about all the little moments that we don't think are big, but turn out to be big in the end. So, for instance, second week of the season, Ohio State has 34 service errors in a 5-game loss to Grand Canyon on a Sunday afternoon. So we don't think anything too much of that match. But then you look back at it 3 months later, it's like, oh, if that match went different, we have a totally different conversation going on right here, because then Ohio State has the head-to-head, Grand Canyon has one more loss. So once again, every match matters in the season. This is case of point, but Grand Canyon, they're going to be in if everything goes chalk.
Can I stop you there?
Sure.
Real quick, let me jump in real quick. Before we said that if Long Beach faces Hawaii, if that's to happen, not to disseminate any information, but Long Beach is going to have to come from behind in order for that to happen in the current match happening right now.
Carry on.
Okay, so really quick, Irvine, side note for everyone, Irvine has to win out. They have no chance of an at-large. None. Sorry, they had their chance with those matches against Hawaii and Hawaii, last week against Long Beach. Even if they were to beat Hawaii, or even if they were to beat Long Beach tonight, this would be recorded, no chance for an at-large. They have to win out. Brandon or Jonathan, what was your question?
So who exactly are the teams under consideration? Like, can you list all of them right now?
Yes. So the teams that we're projecting that are under consideration is going to be UCLA, Penn State, Hawaii, Long Beach State, Grand Canyon, Ohio State, Ball State. Even if either of those teams, no matter which team loses in the MIVA, both of them are going to still be under consideration. You look at the RPI, you look at the numbers. And then we have North Greenville right now under consideration simply because they're the number one seed. If they lose, they're out of consideration. King comes into play. They are going to be under consideration, which if that's the case, that does help
Long Beach State.
Yeah, that helps Long Beach State a little bit as well. I don't know if that helped Long Beach State enough to move the needle to possibly move into a 3 seed or something like that. I mean, maybe if Long Beach comes back here tonight and wins, then they would beat Hawaii in the finals. You know, that'd be kind of the conversation that you would have. But yeah, so those would be the teams. And once again, IVA, Lincoln Memorial, look, I totally get there's an argument. 20-4, you know, great season. Should they at least be under consideration? It's a very fair question to ask. But look, the numbers besides the wins, the rest of the numbers are just not there for Lincoln Memorial.
So you said BYU is not under consideration?
Oh, sorry, BYU is under consideration.
So another match that you, kind of probably overlooked at the time, but now as big as that Ohio State lost, they played at Provo twice and they lost one of their matches in 5. Like, if they pull that out, that could change things.
Yeah, and it's all, once again, all these little matches that we don't think about throughout the season that we don't think matter. No, they all matter just as much as these late season matches. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. As of now, knock on wood, there hasn't been too much movement this conference tournament season in the bracketology. I almost kind of wondered if that would be the case after last year, you know, would lightning strike twice and you would have two crazy conference tournament weeks? That doesn't seem to be the case this year, but we're still a day away and it could possibly happen.
So if we're assuming chalk, let's get into the actual seeding. How do you see it playing out?
All right, so if we get an actual seeding, let's say everything goes chalk. And for this argument, we're going to say, once again, Hawaii wins it. So UCLA, you're going to look at all the comparisons, all the numbers. The fact that UCLA is 9-2 against teams under consideration, a far superior record to everyone in the field, UCLA is going to get the number one seed. I know Hawaii fans are going to be upset. It's, hey, we beat them. Yes, you did beat them, but look at all the data points, strength of schedule, RPI, record against teams under consideration. There's just everything is there that UCLA would be the number one overall seed. Number two, once again, this is if everything goes chalk. Right now we have Penn State over Hawaii.
Oh.
Which I'm very, like, I filled this out, and I'm kind of queasy filling it out because that's how uncertain I am. So I kind of look at this, and I think that this is going to be an interesting discussion for the committee when you start getting into the one thing you want to try to do as a committee is make sure that you are kind of taking a consistent approach across the board. So if you're going to, so for instance, we talked about earlier, well, yeah, the head-to-head matters, but for Hawaii, you know, they lost, UCLA lost to Hawaii, but look at everything else that UCLA was able to accomplish. That's a fair argument, number one. Well, then the comment should be, hey, look, we should carry out that same approach across the board where head-to-head matters. And I should say, pause right here really quick and add to everyone, when you actually get into seeding, you have already determined the field. So when you're filling out your bracket, you're actually picking the seven teams, and then you're going in and seeding. So the conversation for how someone gets an at-large over another team could be different to actually how you seed it. So, for instance, when I'm mentioning head-to-head and things like that in the at-large for why Grand Canyons go get it over BYU, that is an important point for how – for why that happens. But then you can pause, have a separate conversation once you determine the seeding. And that, I think, because you have those three teams so close to get each other, Penn State, Hawaii, UCLA, I think Long Beach is there too, but, you know, maybe one step below. I think that that's kind of where you get into it. How did, what was the record of all these teams against each other? You know, how can you, you know, figure that, you look at that. So if you kind of start playing around with those numbers, I'm kind of looking at, okay, you know, Hawaii was 2-1 against those teams, Penn State was 2-1 against Hawaii and UCLA. Hawaii was 1-1, so edge Penn State. I mean, RPI is a little better, strength of schedule for Penn State's a little better. I mean, you are splitting hairs here to determine who's going to be two, who's going to be three. I have Penn State currently slated in there, but that would not surprise me. Would not surprise me at all if things end up getting flipped and you have Hawaii ahead of Penn State. It would not shock me because I think that they're that close. Continuing to play out, if everything goes chalk here, Long Beach is going to be the four. Interesting enough, if Long Beach comes back and beats UC Irvine and then beats Hawaii on Saturday, I think Long Beach could actually have a case to be the number two if that plays out in that situation. And that would actually drop Hawaii down to four, because I don't think Penn State's going to fall any lower than three. So you're going to have Long Beach four. Grand Canyon will be five. Once again, they have the head-to-head against whoever comes out of the MEVA. And then the number six seed is going to be the MEVA winner, either Ball State or Ohio State, both of them were slated in. They'll play the Conference Carolina winner, whether it be North Greenville or King.
Is it safe to say that there's nothing that can change seeds five through seven right now at all? Are they kind of locked in at this point?
So I think so. This is where I think stuff gets interesting. So let's say you have the chaos theory approach. and we talk kind of talk about, you know, this is what, you know, you would love Jonathan because you're the age of chaos. Let's say you have Princeton win, you have Stanford win, those two matches. Okay, your conference Carolinas go probably still be that seven behind Princeton and Stanford, because Stanford, you know, a little bit better record. And they're, and non-conference wise, you know, these two teams didn't get the wins they needed to, like let's say Barden did back in 2019, you know, to be the number six. Either way, you're going to have the conference Carolina team probably in that seventh spot. If that plays out, you kind of get the anarchy approach, like we said, we're talking about. I would probably say you're going to have Princeton back in that play-in match, which would be really interesting.
No, it's not the play-in match, remember.
Or the first opening round match. You would have Princeton back in the opening round match, which would be interesting. You could get a rematch of Princeton-North Greenville. I would say Stanford would be your number five seed, and then the winner of Ball State, Ohio State would move to the four seed. You know, once again, you play out that scenario, though, if this were to happen, the anarchy theory, that would mean then that of your four top teams that have clearly asserted themselves, UCLA, Penn State, Hawaii, Long Beach State, one of those teams would not get in the NCAA tournament if you have both Stanford and Princeton win.
Wow.
So that is like the only scenario that I could see, you know, there being, you know, crazy movement. Now, you could get, if Princeton wins, for instance, you know, I think that MEVA winner moves to the 4-5 game, which, you know, and, you know, Grand Canyon's out, if that's the case. So Grand Canyon's only getting in if everything goes chalk. That's the only way Grand Canyon gets in, which, once again, you get that scenario that comes out. Then you got Long Beach probably going up against, you know, a Ball State team or something like that. So it could be interesting. Or you got Penn State even drop the four, if that's the case, if Penn State were to lose. You don't necessarily know if they would, but I could see that happening if it's that close. So, yeah, we're going to have some interesting stuff. I think, though, I will say, if UCLA loses, the team that probably conference championship-wise, if they were to lose the conference championship, that is the best case to still get a top two overall seed, would be UCLA. It would be a lot, but I think UCLA has the best case if they were to lose tomorrow to still get by the semifinals.
Oh, okay.
So this is fun.
And you can find all that information on offtheblockblog.com.
And on that note, we are going to end it so we can watch the rest of this Big West match. And folks, this is going to be some fun volleyball. Enjoy. Have some fun. It's conference championship Saturday. Get excited. Can I hear a hurrah?
Hurrah.
Hooray.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed And For Off The Block, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. For more volleyball coverage throughout the week, visit the Off The Block website at offtheblockblog.com. You can also find us on all the major social media platforms at Off The Block 11.